You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
And welcome to the UFC Fight Night post-show live stream. And now your host, Mr. Mike Heck.
It's just so soothing after a night of fights, isn't it? That music in the background. The UFC, anyways, has put together a very deep card for their third of four Fight Island events. And this one had a little bit of everything tonight. And in the end, we have a brand new UFC flyweight champion in Davison Figueiredo. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the UFC Fight Island 2 live post-fight show on the MMAfighting.com YouTube channel. I am Mike Heck, being joined by the greats Alex Kaylee and Jose Youngs. We have a new champion in Davison Figueiredo, a.k.a. finishes Joseph Benavidez in the first round. But you know how we like to do things. Before we get to the main event a little more in depth, thoughts on the card in its entirety. How would you grade this one from top to bottom?
Okay, you can go first.
Yeah, all right. Man, I'm always hesitant to go above B plus, like my default answer, but I would almost call like a strong A minus. I don't know. I'm just looking at the card again. I don't know if there was a bad fight. I'm not saying it was all barn burners, but I don't know if there's a single fight in the card that I saw and I was like, oh, well, that was a snoozer. Like, this was a really, really solid card from top to bottom. So maybe I'm just high off of sort of those exciting performances we saw in those last two fights. I'm going to go A minus. That was good. That was good MMA stuff.
What do you think, Jose?
Yeah, I'll go B plus, A minus. I was saying this on the weigh-in show with Esther that just looking at this fight, like the actual records of the fighters, Joseph Benavidez had 6 losses, I think, leading into this fight. And that was the most losses by a fighter on the entire card. There were a lot of undefeated fighters, 1-loss fighters, 2-loss fighters. So this seems like a card that the UFC could use to build stars. And I think they knocked it out of the park with that because we had a lot of really excellent performances by fighters that A, needed wins or needed introduction maybe to the fans that don't watch all these fights. And we know sports going on, and Dana White, he said one of the most recent scrums, like the sport has never been healthy. The sport has never been talked about more. And I think if that trend is carrying over fight to fight on Fight Island, this was a home run for a lot of UFC prospects looking to make a name for themselves.
Listen, when you have a fight card that ends before 11 p.m. Eastern time, that automatically knocks you up a notch or two. So I'd say this is a solid B plus, all things considered, because the formula was there, not just because it ended at a decent time, but we had some great fights. We had some painful yet memorable finishes. We have a brand new champion. This is a damn good event. And some breaking news for those tuning in right now. The bonuses are out. Fight of the night. Mark Jacasey versus Rafael Fiziev, performances of the night. Of course, Davison Figueiredo and Ariane Lipski, which I'm sure we're going to talk about both of them. Definitely going to talk about Davison Figueiredo right now because we have a brand new champion. He dominates Joseph Benavidez. He knocks him down 3 times and then finally put him to sleep right before the first round came to an end. Alex Kaylee, got to give it up for Davison Figueiredo, not just because of the performance, but what he had to go through just to get there, right?
Yeah, it's been a crazy ride for Figueiredo. Look, some of it self-inflicted, of course, from the first time where he missed the weight, you know, he's the kind of person, he owns that, right? He's not making excuses. And then he gets the knockout in that first fight, but there's a controversy with the headbutt, completely accidental. So not only he gets that win, but somehow doesn't walk out with the title. It remains vacant. Thankfully, they rebook it quickly. Positive COVID-19 test turns out only to be for the antibodies, thankfully, not the active virus. He's got to fly to Abu Dhabi, get more testing. We don't know what's going to happen. They're talking about bringing Alexander Pantoja in. Is Davison Figueiredo going to make weight? You know, making 125, very difficult. Somehow he does all that and then puts on puts on the greatest performance of his career so far when he needed it the most. So it's a hell of a story.
Jose, what do you think? Because, you know, we don't really appreciate the power all the time of Davison Figueiredo. But then when you see him in the octagon with a guy like Joseph Benavidez, he is massive. Like, he is a massive individual to get down to 125 and to be able to compete the way that he did. Your thoughts on Figueiredo becoming the new champion and his performance tonight?
I mean, the UFC needed a reason to keep the flyweight division around. And once Henry Cejudo beat Demetrius Johnson, and Henry Cejudo was saying like, oh, I saved the division, this and that. And then he vacated after holding the belt for a long time. Then the first fight ended in such drama. The UFC flyweight division needed a fight or a finish that was good enough to, quote, save the division. And my God, Davison Figueiredo has already proven in my mind, because I've watched all of his UFC fights, that he is must-watch television if you're just a fan of violent, awesome fighting. If you're just a fan of face punching, he's your guy. He's not the most charismatic guy if you can't speak Portuguese. He's not big on social media. Of course, he has that famous picture of him and his bull, so everyone kind of knows him from that, from his viral photos. But my God, man, every single fight he's in, we're talking about it at the end. Because, like, remember, AK, you and I were at a fight in Edmonton against Pantoja, and we were both talking, like, that fight absolutely ruled. And we were like, imagine if this fight was on the main card. The Flyaways would have a new superstar. And then he gets the fight against Joe B, misses weight, headbutt, this and that. And then everyone is just vilifying him. Like, and then AK said all the drama leading up to the fight. And then it seems like every time he touched Joe B just fell down. And it was one of those fights that was just tough to watch. And the fact that it was so one-sided in a championship fight, I don't know any flyweights out there who are going to pose many problems to a guy with that much dynamite at the end of his hands, 125 pounds. Because honestly, he could go up to 135 and probably be just as dangerous. So if he sticks around at 125 and continues to make that weight, I don't see a lot of fighters that are going to pose many problems to him.
Jose, I want to go back to you because we were talking about this a little bit before we went live. What about Joseph Benavidez? I mean, this guy has been around for so long. He's one of the very best to ever do it, to not become a UFC champion. He's so well respected. He was the sentimental favorite coming in, especially here in the United States. And I don't want to take anything away from Davis and Figueiredo because he threw a perfect game tonight, but that was heartbreaking to watch, wasn't it? Especially, you know, someone covering the sport, someone who's followed Benavidez for so long. And especially if you're a Benavidez fan, that was rough.
I mean, it goes without saying that you talk to a lot of media members and they say, like, who's your favorite fighters to interview? A lot of them will put Joe B on that list. Like, he's very understanding with his time. He gives great answers. He has interests outside of fighting that he's so passionate about and will talk about. But I don't think you can find anyone in this business that doesn't have a good thing to say about Joseph Benavidez. I mean, I was doing pros reacts, like the Twitter reacts on our site. And the amount of crying emojis, like the emojis with the cries, like the amount of sadness I saw just in his fellow fighters' tweets, it was that the if you make a ratio of people saying congratulations to Figueiredo and people lamenting the fact that Joe B lost, it was maybe 3-1 people upset that Joseph Benavidez lost. So just the fact that his fellow fighters are that much heartbroken that Joseph Benavidez lost is telling on how the sport views him. And where he goes from here, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if he hung it up. But if he wants to keep fighting, just because he wants to keep fighting, I'm not going to tell him not to. I'm never going to tell a fighter that they have to retire. But he's not going to get a title shot anytime soon. He's 2-0-2 against the current champion. He's not had – I still think he's the best fighter to never win a belt in any sort of major promotion. He's too small for 135. So if he wants to just keep fighting just because he loves to keep fighting, by all means, keep going. But I don't know where he goes from here if he still wants a title.
AK, anything you want to add to that?
Look, it's no secret that we like Joseph Benavidez around here. He's been a fantastic guest on Coffee Talk with Esther and Casey. Not just a good dude, as Jose says, as everyone in the media will acknowledge, but a friend of the site for sure. And it was hard to watch, you know. For me, I don't know him personally, but I will say I'm a fan of his work. And the story would be such a good one, you know, to finally win it. Figueiredo is a great story, too. I'm sure when we, you know, people dig a little deeper into his background and where he came from, they'll say, yeah, you know, it's just inspirational as any athlete that has to struggle and then make it to the top. But Benavidez, so much of it has happened in front of us, you know, so much of that story has happened in front of us. And to see him fall short one more time and in really such brutal fashion. I mean, there's visuals, the finish with him getting choked out. Unfortunately, that's now going to be a meme. That's going to be something, a replay that people are going to see for years. You know, that's the business, right? If this is the end for Joseph Benavidez, I'll quote Cocktail here and say, everything ends badly. Otherwise, it wouldn't end, right? So sorry to bring everyone down. But congratulations, though, of course, to Davison Figueiredo. That was awesome. That was awesome.
We're not going to do any matchmaking talk for this particular fight because, Alex, some breaking news here. If you know, feel like you haven't heard enough of myself and Alex K. Lee from a podcasting front, we are adding another podcast to the network starting this week. On to the next one. That was a column that was like 2,000 words every week. We're now going to condense that into like a 20 to 25 minute podcast every week, doing the matchmaking that way. So that's going to launch. We're going to record that tomorrow. Probably going to launch Monday morning. I think that was the plan, but maybe it'll launch tomorrow. I don't know. But we're going to turn that into podcasting form. So we'll talk all about the matchmaking stuff a little bit later. But this is also like the A-side after dark. So if you guys got questions, comments, thoughts on the event, we will get to those in a little bit. We'll get to as many as we can. You know, and it's early. We could do this for the next 5 hours if we want to. We probably won't, but we could. let's talk about the co-main event, Jose Youngs. Jack Hermanson submits Kelvin Gastelum in just over a minute. That was pretty surprising to see it end like that, because we thought if anyone was going to finish this fight in the first round, it was probably going to be Kelvin Gastelum. If Hermanson was going to win, at least in my eyes, I thought he would, you know, have a well-rounded decision win. Turned out, Hermanson finishes the fight quickly, gets a quick paycheck. And then he match made for all of us in the post-fight press conference. I know AK is a little salty about that, but your thoughts on the Joker's performance tonight?
I mean, it's awesome. It's the fight. It's the performance he needed, especially coming off that devastating loss to Captain Crystal Jared Cannonier in like his backyard. He's supposed to matched up against Chris Weidman, who former champion, is supposed to be another test as the main event, I believe, in Oklahoma City. And then he loses that to the pandemic, and he gets bumped down to a 3-round co-main event against a guy coming off back-to-back losses. And my God, like Jack Hermanson, like you said, if anyone's going to finish that fight quickly, I thought it would be Kelvin Gastelum, be like he's shown in the past. And as Jack Hermanson has shown, he also can finish fights quickly, but it's usually by his patented guillotine, or he just gets a well-rounded decision win like he did against Jacare Souza. But I don't know anyone that had Jack Hermanson tapping out Kelvin Gastelum with a heel hook on their 2020 bingo card. Because if you claim you did, you're lying. And you're lying, because that was unbelievable. Kelvin Gastelum's already apologized on his social media. Two, I know we're going to talk about it later, but two leg lock style submissions on one fight. Truly, I, as a fan of the just wackiness and goofiness of MMA, I loved it. But yeah, Jack Hermanson, the biggest win of his career in the most stunning way, I would say.
AK, outside of Jack Hermanson playing matchmaker and stealing your thunder, what did you make of his night tonight on Fight Island?
Well, first of all, guys, let me tell you something. I was thinking outside of the box on this one. You guys are all saying you thought if Gastelum were to win, it would be by a first round finish. My predictions, which are printed on MMAfighting.com and cannot be changed. I thought that Gastelum was going to win by decision. So I was super wrong. You guys were kind of wrong. I was super wrong. I went all the way the other way with it. It's tough, you know. It's so tough for Kelvin. We all know what a talented guy he is, and man, it feels like on any given night he can hang with anyone. We saw it. He went 5 rounds with the current champion, so we know he can. But it's when you're facing someone with Hermanson's skill, man, he makes that one mistake. You know, we've seen people do it. They try to get up off the ground, and they just leave a leg or they leave an arm, and it's that little moment. And you think it couldn't happen to someone with Gastelum's experience, but it can happen to anybody. And he got caught, you know, it's essentially getting caught by a punch. He got caught by the submission. And then, by the way, I mean, by no means am I saying that this was lucky. Hermanson has great, right, great submission skills, is absolutely a finisher. And man, yeah, like Jose mentioned before, really bounced back from that Cannonier loss and has himself right back in the thick of that title picture, as he himself illustrated after doing all the matchmaking for us, Mike.
I mean, yes. It also, I want to add, like, we talk about it not being lucky, like veteran wherewithal to when you're dry, because that was the beginning of the fight. There's no sweat. There's no blood. There's none of that. So if you see a leg and you know your opponent's dry, you're not going to not grab it and try to snap their ankle in half. So, yeah, props to Jack Hermanson for just showing veteran wherewithal to take advantage of a hanging heel in front of him.
And Jack Hermanson said in the build-up to the fight that he was glad that he got Kelvin Gastelum over Chris Weidman, because Gastelum's the more relevant guy in the division. And that's just a huge notch on the old belt for Mr. Hermanson. But that's the winner. We got to talk about Kelvin Gastelum, Jose, because now he's lost 3 straight fights. He lost to Adesanya. He lost to Darren Till. And then he gets finished in just over a minute to Jack Hermanson. So, man, we talked about Joseph Benavidez being in a pretty tough spot. Kelvin Gastelum, with the landscape of this division right now, he's in a really tough spot, is he not?
He's in a tough spot, but it's rough because his loss, it's looking at his trajectory, it's bizarre. His fight against Israel Adesanya is what I consider one of the 5 greatest title fights I've ever seen in MMA. It's right up there with Lawler McDonald, with Jones Gustafson, Joanna and Zhang Weili. That was the one of that performance is unbelievable. If he didn't shoot him for that takedown against Kelvin Gastelum, he could be champion after he rocked him. Or if he had gotten the ability to fight Robert Whittaker when Robert Whittaker fell out down in Australia, he might have been champion. So to go from a fight of the decade style fight to laying an egg against Darren Till in a very flat fight and very bizarre fight in Madison Square Garden, no less, to now getting heel hooked in less than, 3 minutes in the first round in Abu Dhabi, it's like every step. It's not he's taking one step back. He's taking like 10 steps back in terms of his actual performance. So still relevant in the division, is still a guy that could headline a fight night down the road, speaks both two languages. Hopefully he has his USADA situation in check going forward, but very, very bizarre trajectory for Kelvin. But I'm not taking anything away from Jack Hermansson, because again, he took advantage of the situation and capitalized. But yeah, I have no idea what UFC can do with Kelvin Gastelum at this point.
All right, AK, I don't know if we're going to touch on this fight on the new show, because we're going to be breaking out Wednesday night's card as well. So we'll probably break down like 6, 7, maybe 8 of these bad boys. So if you are the matchmakers, if you're wearing the matchmaker hat right now, how do you book Kelvin Gastelum moving forward?
I don't know if I have a specific name for him. I do feel like he has now fallen into that sort of high level gatekeeper role, which again, there's no shame in that. Like Jose said, you can still have high profile positions on cards. You can still have high level opponents. But as far as the UFC viewing him as a serious contender, it's really, really gonna be hard to do. Now, again, he's young, you know, he's fairly aged in fight years. He's been around for a while, but he doesn't turn 29 till October. So, you know, as much damage as he's taken, and he has been in some pretty high octane fights, he's not out of his prime by any means. Again, the results are tough, and a 3-fight losing streak in the UFC is, I mean, normally a death sentence, you know, when you're not as high up ranked as he is, because he is going to get more opportunities. So again, I don't have a name, but I do feel like he unfortunately is in that position where guys will just be looking to make their name off of him, and he'll be a quality opponent for future up and comers. But you know, he's not an easy fight by any means, so he'll be a test. He'll be a test for people. I just don't know if we ever see him get another number one contender's opportunity or title shot.
Yeah, and it's kind of too bad that Brendan Allen got hurt so badly in his last fight, because I think Brendan Allen versus Kelvin Gastelum would be pretty interesting at 185. You know, Ian Heinisch is there, so
There's also a lot of middleweight fights that are pretty much booked, like Romero and Uriah Hall. Like, what if they ran Kelvin and Uriah Hall back again? They fought in the tough finale. If Yoel Romero beats Uriah Hall, they could run that back. If Yoel Romero loses, what, that's 4 in a row for him or something like that? Like, that's a fight you can make right there. Sure. Shabazzian has a fight against Brunson. Supposedly Karanir still has shoulder surgery. Akhmanov and Weidman have a fight. So I think if the UFC wants to decide what they want to do, they got to wait for a few fights to play out first.
Does anyone think he can return to 170? Is that completely impossible?
Put that on him. He hated that cut. And then I'll throw another thing out there. Like,
that's bad.
And Robert Whittaker coached tough together. They were supposed to fight. If Robert Whittaker loses to Darren Till, like, they've already been booked before. Like, the history is there. Like, I'm still going to want to watch Robert Whittaker fight Kelvin Gastelum at some point in my career. If Whittaker comes up short to Darren Till, I'll make that fight too. But yeah, no matchmaking for Kelvin Gastelum for at least the next 2 months.
Fair enough. Let's get to the featured bout at 155, Mark Chakassy versus Rafael Fiziev. Holy cow. Fiziev, that is a madman. It's like watching The Matrix when that guy fights, and he's been doing this forever. So this is nothing new if you followed his kickboxing career. But man, he came in. I think a lot of people overlooked him in this fight against Mark Chakassy. I know that I did. Chakassy's looked great in his last couple fights, but man, Fiziev looked great. And if there's one guy who shined in an empty arena setting, hearing his shots land, it was that guy. What a performance from Fiziev tonight. AK, your thoughts on a great performance and a big spot for him.
You know, I was a big believer in the more mature, more wizened Mark Chakassy. But guess what? Maturity doesn't mean anything in MMA when you're dealing with an insane person, okay? Fiziev, I knew he was a good striker, but like I think in the last fight I watched, just the one before this one, I was like, oh, okay, there's a little bit of a wildness in him, but he's the kind of guy he can afford to be wild because clearly his fundamentals are so strong. So when you see him doing stuff that looks like unorthodox, the Matrix dodges, that's not something anyone could do. That's someone that you have to have experience. You know, you either or the opposite. You're so inexperienced that you don't know that it's bad. But he's on the other end of it. He has all that combat sports experience. He's a striking coach for, I think, Piotr Jan. I believe they said that on the broadcast. It tells you the kind of the kind of base this guy is working from. You know, this guy teaches the best in the world. So yeah, in retrospect, I mean, obvious pick should have been Fizio. The guy looked fantastic, and he stopped Jacquezi's wrestling. That was really good to see. So it wasn't just like a straight up striking battle. A lot to like there from Fizio. Definitely one to watch. 155. So many exciting matchups ahead for him.
And Jose, on top of his great offense, we talked about the great defense too. The man's got a chin on him because he took some big shots in that third round, especially. What did you think of Fiziev's performance? This is definitely a breakout night for him.
It was, and I'm really disappointed that he didn't get a post-fight media scrum because it's like I was watching this, and the whole time I'm like, my God, this man is terrifying because I picked against him, not because I didn't think he was a good fighter, but in my mind, like he got spinning back kicks by Magomed Mustafev, I think, back in the St. Petersburg or Moscow cards. I can't quite remember. Like he got decimated in that fight. Like that was a violent finish. So in the back of my mind, that's all I'm thinking about. I knew he has over 200 amateur Muay Thai fights. He's like a 3 or 4 time champion. He's a silver medalist in a Muay Thai tournament, in like a Muay Thai championship tournament too. So unbelievable striking. I didn't know how great he would be in MMA. And Giacchese, like Alex said, has been talking about how he's matured. He's confident still, of course, but he's matured. He's more cerebral with his fighting. So Giacchese, he's put some people to sleep in incredibly violent fashion. Like his opponents have literally toppled over. So in the straight up MMA fight, I've assumed Giacchese would hold the advantage, but Fiziev just blew me away. He looked like a completely different fighter than we've seen in the UFC. We knew he could do this, but I am curious to see if he can keep this up against a completely well-rounded mixed martial arts fighter that can threaten grappling, threaten better takedowns, that isn't just looking for that one like because we all know Giacchese needs one touch and you go to sleep. If you can avoid that one touch, you're fine. If he fights someone, Fiziev, that can present more than just that tool, it could be a big problem for him. But in terms of this night, A+ performance, very disappointed he didn't capitalize it and do a media scrum, but it is what it is. But yeah, star making performance right there.
And by the way, Fiziev's chin, how about Jacquezi's midsection torso area? Yo, guys, those abs are not just for show, all right? Those abs saved his life. Because if I took a kick like that, it's freaking Mortal Kombat, all right? I'm getting split in two. And it would explode all over the place.
I would get split in half blocking one of those. So he could tell me, he could be like, I'm going to kick you in the abs. Yeah. You can block it. And I would block it and I would still die. So that's how hard those kicks come at you.
Maybe if you had one of those sparring pads.
Nah, it's not going to make a difference.
Like that little girl in that clip where Overeem's kicking the little girl and she goes flying. That would be me. I would just go flying across the room, probably into a wall.
100%.
Those kicks are insane.
All right, I'm going to give a spoiler matchmaker pick here for Fiziev, Jakar Close. I think that's a good one. You know,
I will take your Jakar Close, Mike. I will take your Jakar Close. I will raise you a comma worthy.
Ooh, well, that's a fun
I'm
one.
I'm not going to say no to a Lando Venata fight either.
Yeah.
I want to see comma worthy fight Lando Venata.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I don't hate that fight either. But someone said David Tamer, one of the Tamer brothers, whichever one is at that weight class. Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing that fight either. Like again, that weight class is so stacked. I'll see him fight anyone.
I would agree with that. So, and then before that all happened, we got to see one of the nastiest submissions I've ever seen: Ariana Lipsky against Luana Carolina. Good Lord, that leg lock was nasty. And we're sitting there watching it. We're wondering how this is all going to play out and how is she going to be able to pull this off? Because she was working for something and she was in such an awkward position. And then once Carolina's leg went straight up in the air, I was like, no. And it just got worse and worse. So, AK, what was going through your mind as you're watching this submission actually unfold tonight?
I don't know if we can get the picture up. I don't know if the truck can get the picture up there of this, but it was a beauty of a submission. I said it was the most effed up position I'd ever seen in MMA, just off the top of my head. Because It wasn't just the end of the fight. It wasn't just how it finished. Lipsky's own leg was like twisted inward. If people watch, it was twisted into her at like this weird angle. I guess she looked fine. You know, she's a flexible person, so it wasn't the worst thing in the world for her. But it looked like she was going, there we go. So I don't know where even her, oh, there, okay, now you can see her own leg. It was in a worse position, I think, before she got the submission going. That's lovely. And, but that is... The other thing I want to point out is that just before you can find the clip on our website, it's all over the internet right now. Just before she did it, she kind of looked to her side, maybe to her coaches for instruction. But if you look at just the clip by itself, it almost looked like she was looking for permission. Like, is what I'm about to do here legal to do to another human being. And then it's just, well, I'm going to do it. And then she cranked on it and it was absolutely horrifying.
We've seen some slick submissions, some really memorable submissions over the years, Jose. I think Demetrius Johnson in the Mighty Whiz Bar always sticks out to me in memorable submissions. But in terms of like painful looking submissions to watch them live on television, is this a top 10 for you, or is that too much?
That's a good question. I can't answer that right now because I can't really, because there are certain submissions I've seen live, like a fight that no one talks about ever, that because it's not like one of those great submissions, but the Anthony Burchak's heel hook submission loss, I think to Ian Entwistle or something like that. That was on the Phoenix card. I was about 5 feet from that, and Anthony Burchak looked at me in my eyes when it happened. I was like, ah, he was like freaking out. So like that would be burned into my eyes forever. So, but in terms of a female fight, this has to be up there. I mean, it was a weird angle when she was getting the angle. I'm like, why is she just giving up her back like this? Like I was very confused by the whole situation. And then she grabbed her leg and basically used it as a joystick pulling it back. It was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. So in terms of women's MMA, 100%. But in terms of overall MMA, I'd really have to sit down and think of it, because like what was that, UFC 228? We had like two Suvorov stretches in the span of like an hour, with Zabit and Aljamain Sterling both getting those. So yeah, but I'd have to think about it. But if it is, it'd probably be closer to the 10 range than top five.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think what made that one worse was the empty arena. You could just hear Carolina scream, not just during the hold, but like 30, 45, a minute after the tap. Yeah. Like she was still screaming at the top of her lungs. Like she was in some serious pain. There it is. I mean, look at that leg. Oh my gosh.
Mike, I couldn't tell if that was her screaming or if it was me. That's the problem. You say the scream went on for a while. I'm not sure. It might have just been me.
Yeah, it would surprise me.
The submissions and knockouts that stick in my mind are usually the ones I'm there because I can hear it. Like I was in the arena for UFC 157 when, oh my God, I can't even remember. Was it Brock? I can't remember. He got like the muffler stretch on like the leg. That looked brutal. So it's the ones that you can hear. That like I was about 5 feet away from Anderson Silva's leg snapping in half too. So that will all never. That's like the grossest finish I've ever seen. But yeah, that's that Ariane Lipsky fight, Queen of Violence. I mean, she lived up to her name, I'd say so.
Yeah, but she proclaimed during her scrum that the Queen of Violence is back, and she definitely proved that. So big things coming for her. I think I wouldn't say she's like Amanda Ribas, like that sort of level, but I think she's someone that the UFC needs to use with kid gloves. Just slowly build her up. I think she could become something for them.
She could, but she had a lot of hype coming into the UFC. Well, she was a KSW champion, right? So she was KSW champion. Then who she fight? Like, she fights like Joanne Calderwood and like Molly McCann, like right out of the gate. And I was like, as soon as she lost to Molly, I was like, this might be too big for her. And now that they're kind of giving her opponents not quite on that level. I think, like you said, handle her with care if they want to build a star.
Agreed. Askarov. It's big. Oh, go ahead, Alex.
Want to throw a name out there? Again, I don't know. Sure. Like, this is stepping on our own toes, but I'll just throw the name out. We can elaborate at a later date if we choose to. Sabina Mazo.
Oh, Sabina Mazo. Love that fight. I think that fight is super fun.
There we go.
Well done. Well done.
It's a lot of fun.
We don't even need to talk about that fight because I'm 100% in agreement with you. Maybe we'll just mention it in passing when we record the podcast. But good win for Askarov. That was a statement win. It was a great performance from him. And then Roman Dolidze?
I would say Dolidze, yeah.
Dolidze? Good Lord. What we learned tonight, if we learned anything, is that when you're fighting this man and the weigh-ins are done and you're about to square off and face off with Roman, don't act crazy, bro. Don't do it, because bad things will happen. Violent things will happen. And that's what happened tonight. He looked great. Grant Dawson, that guy is such a monster.
He is so big.
Huge.
If he wants to go to 145, if he gets like his post-fight scrimmage needs 8 to 12 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks or whatever, if he can get back to 145 healthy, it's basically like when Anthony Johnson fought a welterweight. The dude is too big for the division. But if he can do it healthy, why not? I'm not going to tell him not to, but my body's going to hurt watching him weigh in. But dude's going to be a savage in that weight class if he decides to keep going back down there.
Yeah, I've been following this guy for years, and he just gets better and better with each fight. And, you know, Nad landed some big shots. We got to see Grant sort of tested a little bit in the chin department, and he took things pretty well. And then it just became the Grant Dawson show. He put him on his back, he bloodied him up and just wore him down for 15 minutes and gets a big win.
He looks like an incredibly unpleasant person to fight. I mean, fighting anyone is unpleasant, but he has that kind of top game where he's not going to sit in your guard. If you throw your guard, so I've thrown my guard up. It's okay, I've slowed down. No, he's not slowing down his attack. He's throwing up your guard. He's trying to pass. He's throwing crap down on all kinds of crap down on you. I mean, your cardio better be on point. Otherwise, I can see why he's, you know, his last two fights, second round submission, because he's just if you get that first round, you have top control that he usually gets, you're done. I mean, your gas tank is just drained. So,
We like to call that getting big brothered.
Yeah, that's what he's been doing to people. I'll tell you, holy cow!
He's a welterweight fighting at 145. If he fights these 145ers, and he said I'm bigger than a welterweight right now. So he's walking around at like 179. If he enters the octagon at like 179, 180, he's fighting featherweights. Like, it's gonna be a big issue because no one's gonna be able to control. Like you said, if he gets on top of you, that's a wrap for most fighters.
He's definitely a guy to watch. Joel Alvarez had a great submission win, finished Joseph Duffy, and it was the final fight of Joe Duffy's career tonight. That was some sad news to come out of tonight's event. So good win for Alvarez. Joe Duffy's always been a fun guy to watch. Jose, any good Joe Duffy stories over the years?
I've never watched him win live. But I've obviously seen, because all the fights that he's won, I've not been at. So I was at his James Vick TKO. I was at his Dustin Poirier decision loss. So I have not had the fortune of interviewing Joe Duffy off a win. But I vividly remember watching his UFC debut. I think Jake Lindsay was his name. And he had like that left head kick, which like stunned him. And then he followed up with like a left hook to the body. And then he crumples down, and then he just unloads like another uppercut to the face, and that was a wrap. So Joe Duffy's most violent win was his UFC debut, and I really wish he had made the jump to the UFC sooner and not just kind of – I don't want to say piggybacks, but he kind of joined the UFC after the Conor McGregor show kind of exploded. If he was there for the whole Irish rise with MMA, he could have been a lot bigger of a deal. But if you haven't watched Joe Duffy's previous career – before the UFC, like, he's beaten Conor McGregor. He's beaten Norman Park. He's a great fighter. So don't base your thoughts on Joe Duffy off his last three losses, because he was an extraordinarily fun fighter to watch in the past.
And a good win for Joel Alvarez. And I thought his post-fight scrum was pretty funny. He wants to be the underdog for his whole career just because friends can bet on him and he can make them some extra money. So I thought that was very unselfish of him. But a good win for him. He sends Joseph Duffy off to off to greener pastures, onto another thing. But what did you think of his performance tonight, AK?
Alvarez,
yes.
I thought he looked great. He's got really good measurements for 155er. I think people were telling Esther on the weigh-ins, during the live weigh-ins that we did on Friday, that Alvarez was a lock. And I'm not sure if they were just trolling or they knew something that I didn't know. But I mean, he certainly looked like a lock. First round submission of a tough veteran in under 2.5 minutes. So I don't have a lot to say about the performance other than, man, 17-2 now. You can't argue against the results. I think I'm just looking here. He's 6 feet tall. He looks like a solid, rangy 6 feet tall. So there's a lot to like about him. And I'll just add on to the, happy trails for Joseph Duffy. He was one of the last opponents of a Canadian guy, Mitch Clark, who was a big Canadian name heading into the UFC. And so and now Duffy himself, sort of an honorary Canadian. So we certainly welcome him if he decides to stay and make a life here.
Yeah, I do want to add, I think Joe Duffy was the biggest betting favorite at one point. I don't know if that's how it ended, but at one point he was like a -350, which was the biggest betting favorite. But I don't know how those lines ended. A lot of people thought Joe Duffy was going to win that fight.
Is Alvarez the one? I'm trying to remember because there's just so many things to remember here in terms of fights and all these different events. But is Alvarez the one with the crazy leg tattoos?
Oh, that's it. I don't remember.
Did you have to bring that up?
Yes, I think you have to
bring that up.
That was a real bad one.
Someone said, I think it was Bloody Elbows Trent Rinesmith, don't get a mesh tattoo like that if you don't want it to look like you're wearing fishnets. And there was other stuff too. It wasn't just that. Below that, there was all kinds of other stuff. It reminded me also of the Predator, I guess, in a way, but not in a cool way, like kind of in how the Predator's legs look weird way. So, you know what? You can't, whatever. You know what? I've never won a UFC fight before. And if that's the kind of tattoos you have to beat a guy like Joe Duffy, live your life, Joel Alvarez. You know what you're doing.
There you go. Brett Johns gets a nice win over Montel Jackson. And that one kind of surprised me. I think we learned something about Montel Jackson tonight. That guy has potential up the wazoo, but he's just got a, I don't know. There's something there that's just kind of blocking him a little bit. That's just kind of holding him back. And, but he's just a massive guy. His hands are just huge. They're so strong, but Brett Johns, great performance, was able to neutralize Montel Jackson. Amir Albazi, great triangle.
Fantastic.
Choke submission over Malcolm Gordon. Awesome. And, I think the sentimental star of the night from the prelims was Sarukian.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I watched when he fought Islam Makhachev. I thought Makhachev was going to destroy him because I think – was that Sarukian's, what, first or second
first UFC fight? First UFC, his UFC debut.
In Moscow, Habib sitting there. And then after the fight, he lost. But Habib even went up and shook his hand. We're like, you're a good fighter. This might have just been too big of a bite right out of the gate. And then I think his next fight was at UFC 240, right, in Edmonton.
Yeah.
Olivier Aubin-Mercier. And you, of course, I think, AK, picked OAM.
I did not.
Really? Okay.
I picked.
A lot of people were talking about, like, what's an upset? I'm like, I think Sarukian is going to be a big issue in that weight class just because of his UFC debut. It was one of those fights, he looked phenomenal, but he lost. And not a lot of people watched it because it was on a Moscow card. So it really did him a disservice because I think a lot of people overlooked him in that fight. And me and Esther were like on the weigh-in show. Someone was like, what fight on the prelims are you most excited for? And we were both like, Sarukian is a problem in that division. And my God, he looked physically like he's perfect for the weight class, lightweight. And Davi Hamuz is, of course, a name veteran. He's fought in Abu Dhabi before. But yeah, Sarukian is going to be a big issue at 155 pounds.
Yeah, I love that performance. He fought a beautiful, beautiful fight. Ramos is a very, very dangerous guy. Sarukian, he's only 23. He turns 24 in October, I think. People got to know, before the UFC, he had wins over Takanori Sato, Junior Asuncao, Felipe Oliveira is also a former UFC guy. So he was beating UFC level talent before. And this is when he was like 21 or 22. So I knew he wasn't going to beat Makhachev, but I was like, he's going to put up a fight. This kid is super talented. I didn't know his stand-up was this good. Like, he showed off some stuff in the stand-up today that was sensational. And the way he's just going to get better and keep mixing it up with his wrestling, which is already elite. It is not an exaggeration to say this guy's a future world title contender. As long as they keep matching him up right and don't rush him into anything too soon. But he's at his level now. Unfortunately for him, I don't think anybody wants to fight him.
Yeah, it's a tough matchup for anybody.
It's going to be a problem.
Yep,
it's going to be a big issue because I want to see him fight a ton of guys. Like, I want to see him fight like the Alexander Hernandez and the Drew Dobers of the world and the Benil Dariushes. But like, who wants that fight against a 23-year-old unranked? That's a monster.
It's a great point. And then the night kicked off with Sergey Spivak defeating Carlos Felipe. And it was funny because I'm in Boston right now visiting my family, and I was watching that fight with my little brother, and he watched that third round. He goes, oh, Spivak's usually going to get a decision. I go, Brian, mark my words, there's going to be a draw in there somewhere. I guarantee it. And there was one judge scored it a draw. I was like, one judge is going to give Carlos the first two rounds. It's going to be hilarious. If sure enough, that's what happened. So that was kind of a weird fight to watch because Spivak just kept hitting Carlos over and over again. He just kept shaking his head, saying no and walking forward. But that was an interesting heavyweight matchup to start things off. Whoops, we're shaking. Sorry. Let's go to the truck. We got questions. We got comments.
Oh, that's an old question.
Dean's ice cream choice. I like that answer, by the way. It was the correct answer. I listened to the ASAP on the way down.
Hello, gentlemen. All right.
EKC, are you wearing a Mirko shirt?
Yeah.
Look at that. That's sick.
It's got a little a foot, you know, for the gun. Yeah.
Okay.
It has a foot.
I get it. Yeah, I get it.
Get it.
He's a cop with his head kicks. Yeah.
Okay, cool cop. Yeah. All right.
Here's from Croatia too.
What do the peeps got to say?
I'll see. I'll just do this informally right now. Someone said, Jose, did you see your tweet on TV? You had several on TV.
Oh, probably. There it is.
Yeah.
Wait. Yeah, I think I was on once or twice.
Wait, let's go. Okay, Mr. Heck, how many tweets have you gotten on a broadcast?
Several.
Probably like three or four.
Really?
And it's always like I got a bunch like of the first couple of cards, and then it just stopped. And it has to be like clever tweets for me to get up there. Like when Maurice Green submitted John Volante. I said, Maurice Green just crocheted himself a bizarre submission.
That one that's making it for sure.
My Sarukian tweet didn't make the broadcast.
You say about Sarukian? Oh, Starukian.
Yeah, I said
was too confusing. Was like,
in the next year or two, you're going to have to reverse the S and the T in his name because this guy's a problem. Starukian.
It took me a minute. I retweeted that from our account, and I think people just got mad. I think our readers were like, whoa, I'm here to watch fights, not spell. Come on, Mike Hex. So strategic mistake.
It's the first one, but it's all right.
Okay.
It came in the broadcast tonight.
It came in the broadcast.
An incredible insight about Armand Sarukian. Armand Sarukian is serious. Hashtag UFC Fight Island 2. Boom, throw it up there. Throw it up.
Some deep analysis there, Alex. Serious.
I need that Ryan Frederick love. That guy gets tweets on every fight, every round.
Casey, you were saying your own efforts. Casey, your own efforts to get on. What's the problem?
I tried my best. I mentioned Otter Pops like 5 times. Nothing from Otter Pops. I didn't get an RT. Didn't get a favorite from Otter Pops. Those guys, the social media team of Otter Pops, whatever flavor that social media member is, like sucks.
And it's Casey is to Otter Pops as CM Punk is to the WWE ice cream bars.
I hashtag stay curious, even though no one knows what that is. Nothing. Is anyone working over there in Abu Dhabi? This is insane.
You should.
There's only room for one mustache journalist on the tweets, apparently. Casey.
There you go. Casey, you just need to say, like, I can't wait to visit Abu Dhabi someday. Hashtag UFC Fight Island something. You'll get on the broadcast.
I did. I even said, I can't wait to jump on a flight to Fight Island and fly beautiful Etihad Airlines. Nothing.
What do the peeps got to say? Maybe their tweets made the broadcast.
All right. You know,
Chuck, get it together.
Who are your favorite fighters? Wow, we're getting
just general.
Just generally?
Sarukian might be one of my new favorite fighters after tonight.
I mean, Joseph Benavidez still is. I mean, was one of my favorite fighters for sure heading in tonight. Still is. We've said before about how great his story is and just what a good character he seems to be. And he's always put on entertaining fights. Let's not just make this a sentimental thing. You can go through Joseph Benavidez's whole fight library. His fights are awesome.
I will say that, like, before I started covering the sport and was like really watching as a fan, Frankie Edgar was my guy.
Yeah, still. Still. I picked him to beat Zombie. That's right, YouTube. I picked him to beat Zombie. All right.
And I never picked him to beat Max Holloway.
I think I picked him to beat Max Holloway. I don't think I've ever picked against him.
Because I remember in our preview show, you were like, I can't wait to ask Frankie Edgar what it feels like to have a featherweight championship around his waist.
Oh, I gotta ask that you this, so AK. Sad. Let's just say Frankie Edgar doesn't do well at 135 and has to go back up to 45. Who would you pick in a fight between Ryan Hall and Frankie Edgar? That is about as sentimental as it gets for you, buddy.
Like, who do I want to win? Frankie Edgar.
Who would you pick?
Who's going to win? Ryan Hall, because Ryan Hall is unbeatable. All right. I like Frankie Edgar, but I'm not. I'm also a quote unquote certified MMA expert. And Ryan Hall doesn't lose. So, I mean, I just have to say Ryan Hall by default.
Would you say he's serious?
Let me tell you something. That's getting on the. Ryan Hall is serious.
I thought you'd abstain from that fight altogether.
No, yeah, I don't pick against the Wizard.
We're going to backtrack a little bit for what we talked about. So for the newer viewers,
that's all right.
But here we go.
Jose, who do you think should be next for Hermanson?
I like the scenario he laid out. I really want to see him fight the winner of Robert Whittaker and Darren Till. It just depends, like, because the Adesanya Costa fight was also announced during the broadcast, UFC 243 in September. Of course, the Till Whittaker fight is next weekend, so they're not quite on the same timeline, but close enough. If Adesanya Costa is just an insane fight, and it goes back and forth, and someone gets hurt, and they just, you know, it's hard to match make before fights even happen. So Hermanson versus the winner of Till Whittaker, I think, makes a lot of sense. And like you said, the winner of Costa and Adesanya will fight Cannoneer, but I don't think that's gonna happen because Cannoneer's hurt, and Adesanya's on record saying he needs one more fight. So Cannoneer versus whoever when he comes back. So I kind of like Hermanson's little scenario he laid out.
It's interesting because I honestly think if Darren Till goes out there and finishes Robert Whittaker, he's next in line regardless.
I agree, but it depends on – I would say it depends on how he wins because Adesanya Costa hasn't happened yet because, like, we just saw Kamaru Usman fight Jorge Masvidal. Kamaru Usman now has a 6-month medical suspension, and he won. He's still the champion and not an insane fight. So it's really hard for me to make fights over fights that haven't happened considering we don't know what their medical suspensions will be.
That's true.
I would like to see Hermanson versus the winner, especially if it's Edmund Shahbazyan versus Derek Brunson. Don't forget about Shahbazyan.
You took it from me. That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, I'm just going to split the middle with what the two guys just said. Obviously, if Till jumps the line with an impressive win over Whittaker, then Casey's absolutely right. Then you have to either Hermanson will wait, which I don't think he wants to do. He seems like he wants to stay active. And he'll have to take on a Shahbazyan Derek Brunson winner.
Yeah, I would agree with
that. You also have Hall and Romero coming up. Jacques Reyes has to come back at some point after his COVID scare. And then Weidman and Akhmadov are also throwing down. So we said this before, there's a lot of middleweight fights that have to happen before we can
Anderson Silva? Where's Anderson Silva?
I'll watch Anderson Silva fight anyone.
The Joker versus the Spider?
We didn't
Silva 3, make it happen.
You mentioned earlier, but we didn't get this question from a commenters, but for Kelvin, I would like to see Kelvin versus Marvin Vettori. Oh no, they're same camp.
Same camp. And they have the same camps, same everything.
Yeah.
Wah,
wah, wah. Wait.
More.
We need Price is Right loser theme. Dum dum da dum.
This is classic. We already got fans asking for to go up and wait.
Oh, we're going super fights already. Jordan Davis's chances against Jan.
I don't want to answer this question because Jan has to fight Aljamain next, and Davidson has to fight someone to fly away. So, what are his chances? Great, because like the Duke hits hard, but I think Jan's better. I think Jan wins. But it's not like Davidson doesn't have a shot. That dude has dynamite in his hands.
What do you mean that he has to fight Aljamain next? That's not what Dana White has said. Dana White has made – I haven't heard Dana White say that he has to fight Aljamain next.
White also said women would never fight in the UFC.
All right, Jose, let me ask you this. Who should Davidson's first title defense, who's earned that shot? Is it Alex Perez?
Yeah, I would say Alex Perez. It's going to come down to Perez, Moreno, and, of course, Askar right. off Perez. If Pantoja had won, maybe, but they had already fought. Davidson Figueiredo already beat Pantoja UFC 240. So it's going to come down to Askarov, Moreno, and Perez. Perez had an awesome win over Jose Formiga at the Apex. So I personally would love to see Perez throw down with Figueiredo. I think Perez is still he's a flyweight, but he's still a bigger flyweight than a lot of these other guys. So yeah, I like that fight a lot.
How long will the 125-pound division hang on by this thread? Oh, how dare you! I love the flyweight division. I'm sorry.
This question's insulting, but
I think the
worst case scenario is Figueiredo misses weight again for a title fight as a champion. I think that would be horrendous.
Yeah,
but
true.
I feel like
until that happens,
I feel like it's Groundhog's Day with this whole men's flyweight division. We go remember Cejudo versus TJ. We're like, oh, this is for the flyweight division, and then it had the most exciting knockout and the quickest finish, and then we're like, oh, the flyweights are here, and then we're a year and a half later and now we're in the same thing. Oh, the flyweight division again, and then we had the most brutal knockout and one of the quickest finishes of the night, and we still have to have this discussion, and we're gonna have this discussion again in a year again, you know. So
yeah, listen, they're not going to headline pay-per-views, and I'm okay with that. If we want to headline the ESPN Plus car with the flyweight title fight, or make it a co-main event, or a third title fight on a pay-per-view card, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm down for all of that. We get some good flyweight fights coming up. We got Tyson Nam versus Matt Schnell. That's going to be a ridiculous fight at 25. I can't wait for that one. That's going to be violence and quickness and bizarro world. I'm excited for that fight.
Yeah, I still think it's a division that they can push a little more. Look, people are always going to have the casual viewer, I guess, is always going to have this bias against a smaller fighter. I don't believe that. I believe if you have the right personality and you push them right, I think you can make anyone a star. But again, whatever, that seems to be the sentiment among people. Because I mentioned before, how was this the first time Alexander Pantoja was on a main card? Considering how exciting, he's a finisher, he's a contender. you have to push, like, you, it's, I know there's not as big a difference between televised main card and televised prelims anymore. I understand that, but there is still, it still sends a message, a subtle and unmistakable message that what you think of this fighter, if you don't put them in the main card, and fans pick up on that. So I wish they'd done more. Like, this is exactly how things should go. You have two contenders on there with two, you know, two guys fighting for a championship in that division in the main event. And then it's so easy to form a narrative from there. But when you keep shoving these guys in the prelims and not building them up, that's why we have people like Noah White here, of course, asking this question. Is this division always hanging by a thread? And in some ways it is, but it doesn't have to be. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. It's just a marketing issue.
I don't think I can add any more to that. Who's next? Askarov, Moreno, or Perez? Triple threat match?
If they – I watched any of those three fight Davidson Figueiredo. Askarov and Moreno fought to a draw, if I remember correctly, in Mexico. Was it Mexico City? Was it that card? So if they want to run that back, since they fought to a draw and Perez fights Figueiredo as like kind of little final four, I wouldn't hate that whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. AK must as well.
I didn't know you threw it at me. I'm sorry. I like Perez. I like the Perez option that was mentioned before as well. But Askarov really showed me a lot tonight. I wouldn't object at all to Askarov just getting that title shot outright. I'd be like, yeah, cool. I think Perez is the right choice. But
well, according to Guillermo Cruz, Figueiredo is already angling for Cejudo at 135 or asking the UFC to bring back Demetrius Johnson. So
okay,
say what you will that the UFC champion is not calling out his contenders again. Who would you guys trade for?
Oh, look at this question.
Who would you guys trade from the UFC to get Demetrius back and fight Figueiredo? Oh, now we want the trade back.
Who would you trade to one?
Well, it seems like most people aren't putting the flyweight division on this high pedestal, and that it would include Demetrius Johnson. So where do we value him? I mean, it was Ben Askren for Demetrius before. I mean,
Anthony Pettis. Can we sign and trade PBZ?
Anthony Pettis?
Anthony Pettis.
That's actually a really good one.
No, can they re-sign
Pettis? When someone said if trades were allowed and this doesn't have to do with Demetrius Johnson, I was like, if you could make another trade, who would you be? I was like, I would trade Anthony Pettis for Lance Palmer right now. If UFC to PFL. But it's obviously never gonna happen. But yeah, Anthony Pettis or Demetrius Johnson, why not?
Hey, AK, do you have a response to that?
Well, I was just interrupting there. I was saying, can they not sign and trade Paige VanZant, sign her back just to trade her? Wouldn't that be hilarious? because everyone is saying like, oh, well, they sent Sage over there. So maybe one wants someone like Paige because there's, I don't know, I guess they're always going to be associated with each other. The Paige and Sage show, just because I guess their age and how they were pushed and their names rhyme. We're a simple people, I think that would be sort of like the equivalent of what happened with the Askren Demetrius Johnson. I shouldn't say that. You know, Van Zandt, as skilled as she is not as accomplished as Ben Askren was over in one. He was a world champion, of course, in multiple promotions. But I mean, as far as from a marketing perspective, it could kind of work that way. You could easily say that Paige Van Zandt is more well known to the average Joe than Demetrius Johnson is. So that's really the first name that came to my mind. But
you want to do a sign and trade, Paige Van Zandt, Demetrius Johnson?
Yes, sign and trade. They do this in real sports all the time. Yes, a sign and trade.
I think you're going to have to include more in your package to get the number one flyweight in the world.
Jerome Toro, this is a really good question. Can we linger on this for a moment while you guys share it? I'm just looking at the roster right now. This is a really good question.
I would like to trade. I know it's not going to happen because this is never going to happen. Trade Demetrius for Cejudo's contract. So Cejudo goes to one, but then he's allowed to box, but he can do MMA over there, so he can still do other things like pro wrestle. And because the UFC contract is so restrictive. So I'm just saying, but. It ain't gonna happen.
I love the Pettis idea. I actually think that makes a lot of sense.
Do they really need Connor anymore? Can they trade Connor? Technically, he's still under. You don't need him.
All these retired fighters, just give him all these.
What about Dos Anjos, RDA? Doesn't he train at Evolve MMA a lot over in Singapore?
I think that was a relationship for a while, but I'm not sure if that still goes on. Yeah, but
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
I think Jose's got a couple. Jose's on the right track.
That's a good question.
You can just start calling it the general manager of these chats.
That is a great question.
Okay.
That's such a good question.
This is a longtime commenter. It doesn't have to do with tonight's card, but she really wants us to talk about this, so we're going to go a little off card.
All right. Which scenario is more likely, Sugar Sean knocking out Chito Vera or Chito Vera submitting Sugar Sean? Oof. Probably the former.
More likely. I think Sugar Sean can knock out anyone at 135 right now if he touches.
And Vera gets better as the fight goes on. So yes. if he can survive that storm and get it to the third round, I don't know if he finishes Sugar Sean.
Sugar Sean is really good on the ground.
If you pick one, I mean, I'm picking Sugar Sean over knocking out Vera, unfortunately for Vera, but I would actually pick him on the ground too, most likely too.
Sugar Sean is so long and lanky and like he is so big for 135. He reminds me of Connor fighting 145 when he emerged. Like the dude cracks. He's huge and he's going to be a superstar. So yeah, Sugar Sean, I favor him in both of those, and on the ground or the feet.
I love this fight a lot. I think we're going to, you know, and I feel like I, much like Connor, I think every fight Connor had, it was like, oh, now we're going to see if he's for real. And I remember there's like this one meme that was put out. It was like Connor just, oh, now he's going to fight this guy. Now he's going to fight this guy. And then the last thing was after he beat Aldo was now he's going to beat the Undertaker at WrestleMania and he can do it all. So I like, this will be a good test for him. This is like a legit test. Wineland was a good step up. I think this is like the perfect step up too. So we're going to see where Sugar Sean really is. Cause Vera is a savage and he's going to test Sean, no doubt about it. So, but I favor O'Malley in that fight. Question for everybody on the panel: who has the flyweight strap one calendar year from right now?
Valentina Shevchenko.
Men and women. So she'll take both belts.
That's a weird question.
All right, we'll go with the men.
Oh, I guess context wise I should have known. He's probably okay referring to the men's.
So on July 18th at 8:37 p.m. Pacific time, Davis and Figueiredo will probably have the flyweight championship of the world
if there's still a division according to some of our viewers,
right? Noah White. You know what,
I'm gonna say Brandon Moreno will be the champion one year from right now.
I want to say that assassin baby. No, it'll be Demetrius Johnson after he comes back and the Anthony Pettis trade. So
to the sign and trade.
For Anthony Pettis, Paige VanZant sign and trade, and Henry Cejudo's contract. It's big trade.
If Brandon Moreno wins the flyweight championship of the world, I want him to put in a comma after the assassin. So it's just the assassin baby.
Baby.
Not the assassin baby.
More of a statement than
I'm an assassin guy.
This is the best post show ever.
I'm going to say in 1 year, we're going to have two former Ryzen champs as the UFC champs. Manel Cape.
Oh, I don't
know. We'll have the flyweight title. And then Jiří will have the 205 title.
Well, I don't know if people heard that. He said like Manel Cape and Jiří Prochazka.
Manel Cape, I was thinking of him. I just don't think it'll happen in a year. He would have to shoot up there quickly.
Yeah.
I think in like 2 years for sure he could be there, but I don't think in 1 year.
You don't believe?
Yeah, that's tough to ask.
Don't believe.
There's a lot of there's three guys who could fight for the belt right now. So there's at least two title defenses you're gonna have to make before Cape's even in that conversation. So
I'm gonna Cape fight Joe B. There you go.
He's fighting. He's on 252,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he has a fight against a name I'm not familiar with, actually.
Von Turin.
Yeah, I know
he's fighting Rogério.
Is he fighting Rogério Bontorin? Oh, he is.
I think so, yeah.
Yes, he is. Correct. Yeah, UFC 252.
Yeah, there we
go. I don't know very much about his opponent.
It's good. It's a tough fight. That's a tough fight.
What else we got?
Joe B says he's not retiring.
Good for Joe.
Sarukian impressed me tonight. I think he impressed everybody tonight.
Man. He's 23 years old and, man, lightweight, right?
Yeah. I am 14 years older than that guy. That frightens me.
What was this? Why did he get a late notice fight to fight Markachev?
I believe it was. Don't quote me on that. I will look right now. I do believe.
It seems like a weird matchup.
I think he did have to step in for some of the. Let me just check that right now. Talk amongst yourselves while I do you know what we in the MMA media business call research for you guys watching at home.
What type of milk do you use in your coffee?
Listen, D125, no milk, zero milk. I like my coffee so black. There's an Event Horizon. Okay, take it from the pot, put it in the mug and hand it to me. It's so black that I can send a ship through and it pops out on the other side of the wall, breaking the space-time continuum. I do not put nothing in my coffee.
I'm not going to get as descriptive as that, but I would say you spoke for all of us black coffee drinkers.
The barista.
I do today.
Barista brand.
All right, hold on. Casey, what is your incorrect answer on what you put in your coffee?
You're going to skim milk it, aren't you?
Barista. It's the barista brand oat milk.
That's incorrect. It's black coffee.
No, it's not.
You can have the second best answer in what you put in a coffee. It just happens to be second best.
What did you say? Esther is yelling at me.
I'm saying you're wrong.
Yeah, she's saying, why did I marry you? Who put stuff in the coffee?
Well, first of all, everyone settled down. everyone's waiting to hear the Armin Sarukian Islam Makhachev. He was not replacing someone, but the fight was not, booked until about a month before the card. So it was essentially some sort of short notice thing they had to put together.
D125, what type of bad liquid do you put in your coffee?
Let's just go with oat milk.
Oh, we have some very funny answers that I will not read out loud.
What else we got?
Oh, you know what you didn't talk about? I mean, as much as Lipsky's knee bar was freaking awesome and so violent, dude, Hermansson got screwed.
Oh, as if from a bonus?
Yeah, from a bonus perspective. Wow,
bigger spot.
Bigger spot, much higher ranked opponent, underdog. I mean, jeez, guys.
Surprising, yeah. I mean, you had to give it to Figgy. Figgy has a great submission as well, great moment. But it seems wrong not to give Hermansson. This is like that night when those two Sulawev stretches somehow didn't get bonuses, right? It's like sometimes it's just the math doesn't work out in someone's favor, but let's hope the UFC takes care of Hermansson.
It's as shocking as learning someone puts things in their coffee.
Oh, no. Oh, God. DBS or whatever, 125. Thanks, guys. Thanks for bringing up that question, because now Jose will not shut up about this for at least a week. So thank you guys for bringing it up.
What does the G stand for? Good idea?
This is the 2020 variation of pineapple on pizza, ladies and gentlemen. That's I was awesome. There for that.
Jack, what's he doing? What are you doing?
I was there. Don't I sat right next
started.
To him in New York as this what? Whole freaking conversation was going on.
What
it was
are you doing?
I know.
Yeah, that's also an incorrect way to eat pizza. I think Alexander Volkanovski was on record saying he liked it. I was like, wow, it's unfortunate that he's going to be champion and wrong. Yeah, Hermansson definitely
earned it. 100%. AK kind of answered this question for us. Did you ask the truck to pull up the photo of Hermansson's submission tonight, AK? Or did you have the truck pull up the photo of Lipsky's submission?
Correct. You're correct.
That's a good answer.
There you go.
You know what? I think Carolina, is it Carolina? Her opponent? Yeah. I think she deserves maybe 10% of that bonus for making that face.
Seriously.
Because if she just went, knee bar, tap, tap, thank you, good fight. No, she doesn't win the bonus. The fact that you got the pain, you got the real pain, you felt it inside, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was a bad one.
So it takes two to create a horrible MMA moment, much like the main event. Like we said, Joseph Benavidez not tapping and unfortunately passing out in grisly fashion, the camera right in there getting that shot of unfortunately his that vacant look in his eyes. So screenshots all over the place. I'm sure someone has a good photo of it as well. It takes two, like Casey just said.
Move on, Casey. Move on. I'm telling you,
top of the screen.
Matias Martine, you are a buffoon who likes terrible things in this world.
No.
Matias Martini, I will not let him ban you from the chat. You'd say whatever you want. I will not let him. Not whatever you want, but
Martini,
any pizza take
you have. You are my favorite friend. I love you.
I will say that a couple weeks ago, my wife got a pizza with pineapple and bacon on it.
And you threw it away immediately, right?
It was delicious. It was awesome, I got to say.
Pineapple and bacon's good?
Another 10% for that scream. Correct.
Yeah, 100%.
No, it added to it.
Yep. What else we got? I like that. We're all over the place tonight. I'm surprised none of the panelists use soy milk.
Whoa, that's a shot. That's a winky. That little winky face. That's not going to make me feel better about that comment, D125. I see what you're saying.
I didn't say a bad thing about you.
Yeah, what's going on, man?
Like, Casey.
D125.
That's a shot at Casey specifically.
That is a shot at Casey.
I use oat milk.
MMAs.
Yeah, what do you drink? What do you have a subscription to on Amazon?
Soylent.
There you go.
I'm getting lean.
You are getting lean.
What weight class? As soon as the gyms open up, you know.
What weight class are you in right now?
Very close to welterweight.
Wow.
Walking at, almost walking at welterweight now.
Wow.
So now nice. I was like, oh, I guess I can make lightweight. I guess no, after a weight cut, like, oh,
that's what I'm like right above lightweight right now.
I'm not talking about this. I'm not joining in.
Well, I mean, we're getting questions about just mixed martial arts in general, but you know.
Yes.
We'll throw a few more out there. Why the hell not?
Oh, right. Okay. Hold on. Oh, I like. Okay, go ahead.
Do you think Masvidal sells more pay-per-views than Marty? Of course.
Yeah.
Marty McFly, probably.
Every Marty in general. Yeah.
Marty Funkhauser.
Every single Marty in the world.
I'll combine all the Martys and still, yeah.
Kamaru Usman. Kamaru Dean Usman. Yes.
Yeah. I think Masvidal sells more pay-per-views than everyone not named Connor or John Jones right now.
I think he sells more than John Jones.
At this point, yeah.
I agree. Yeah. Who's,
maybe. Depends on who John Jones is.
Depending upon, of course.
John Jones has never done a million pay-per-view buys, has he?
The second DC fight got real damn close.
It was like 875,
which is really good. I thought the Rashad Evans fight.
Oh, the Rashad fight probably got close. I know Rashad Rampage went real high. Yeah. I think it's John Jones, it's his dance partner that'll help him, but like the draw will be John, but he needs a guy that's gonna push his buttons. Like if John fights Francis, that could do crazy numbers.
That could do a million.
That's what I'm saying. Like, but John by himself is still one of the top five draws right now. But yeah, you're probably right. Masvidal is probably the bigger star right now. I'd even put Masvidal over Stylebender, unfortunately.
Right now, yeah.
Jones Evans apparently 700,000, so actually well short of a million. Still a very strong number, but definitely short.
Huge
of a
million. Number in 2020.
Yeah.
I really wonder, and this is a tough. I think this is a tough answer. But like Masvidal, John Jones, all this kind of hype is still based on this kind of pre-pandemic world.
Mm-hmm.
In this post-pandemic world, no press conferences, no open workouts. No world tours, no face-offs, no real face-offs, you know? So, like, how is the UFC going to really create new stars without being able to just, I mean, all they can sell is just empty arena fights. I think it's just, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, how long can we kind of continue this without just relying on the past?
Well,
I would say, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You're getting any fighters.
Yeah,
100%. But you're gonna need fighters like Amanda Ribas, who like their personality just like oozes out of every, like that is who they are. I think now that you're not gonna have like these, it's not that John Jones did open workouts anyway. You're gonna need fighters that fight every day, like Donald Cerrone. So he just is on TV all of the time. So you're gonna recognize those names over and over and over and over and over. Or you're gonna have fighters like Sugar Sean, Amanda Ribas, who's the guy that just fought like 2 days ago. Now he all of a sudden has a fight books next Saturday. What's his name?
Shimada.
Yeah. Like you need guys like, need men and women like that, where you're only going to see them once and they're going to stick around in your mind forever. Like there's no choreographed, press tour anymore. This is who they are. And it's with performances to go with it.
I will say this. I feel like at least over the last 3 months, more seeds have been planted for potential stars than
I've
seen in the last couple of years, especially these Fight Island events. I mean, just look at Wednesday night's card alone, between Munir and the guy that's coming back and next week. And, you know, we've seen some seeds planted. I mean, Amanda Ribas, that was a breakout performance for her. Sean O'Malley star is in a much bigger spot now because of that knockout. And now, you know, some of the guys who fell off, they're starting to make a comeback. But even
like Dan Hooker is going to be a big deal now forever because he had that epic war. And like, unless he goes on like a Kelvin Gastelum one where he just lays two eggs in a row. But like if Dan Hooker could headline the next three fight nights, he fights in and I wouldn't be surprised. So UFC can still do it, but it's going to be much more. It's going to be up to the fighters much more to take advantage of the platform that they're given.
Bryce Mitchell, another guy who's
100%.
He's on the cusp.
Yeah, and even aside from personalities, I hope that that ESPN does a good job of propagating these highlights as much as possible. Like, show people that Ariana Lipsky highlight, or at least the visual as much as you can before her next fight, and let people know this is how she's this. See the woman who did this? she's back this weekend, you know, or she's been back in 2 weeks. Like really, really have ESPN just replaying these things nonstop. That O'Malley KO, whatever Francis Ngannou's last performance was, anything. I know they do a good job of this already, but I think now more than ever, like you said, without the lack of sort of these opportunities for fighters to show that their personalities verbally and things like that, really kind of emphasize this new generation of highlights and these guys who can finish these fights in these crazy ways, and try and get, you know, try and get the new audience, try and get some of that younger audience back. I don't know how the UFC is with right. with the younger crowd, but I know, I mean, I don't know that many young people. I'm old, but based on the chat,
the TikTok generation.
Yeah, the talk tick, whatever. But you know, based on the chatter that I hear on the streets, you know, I do keep my ear to the streets sometimes. There really isn't MMA is not like a sexy young person sport. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just the circles I move in. But as far as I know, definitely like NBA would be number one, I think, as far as sort of what a younger generation watches. And then I'm not sure would be second, but it's not MMA.
UFC 243, the winner of that main event, could be a huge deal, considering Costa and Adesanya are going to sell the hell out of that fight. They are two very genuine people where they're just like crazy people, like in and out of the octagon. Like they're very fascinating people to follow on social media and interviews. They both have ties to a lot of different cultures, like Adesanya, like Nigeria and New Zealand. He's getting a bigger deal in America. And then Paulo Costa obviously is fluent in Portuguese and in English. They're both the primes of their career. They both fight super violently if given the opportunity. And I think the bad blood leading into that fight, the winner is going to be a big deal.
But I still think something's still missing, because we still, if the UFC continues how they're promoting fights, how they continue this way, like we're never going to have that face to face ever. You know, there's like, yeah, it's just never going to happen. So one thing I don't understand, remember that very famous and awesome CNBC interview with is this the Money Channel with Nate and Connor? Remember that?
Yeah.
I don't understand why we're doing more of that with two guys. They're in separate rooms, but we're still talking to DC and John Jones. Like John Jones going, you think I'm just going to let you do that to me? You know, DC said that.
Or Garbrandt and Cruz, where Garbrandt tried to leave the room and find Cruz's
room. Yeah.
And Cruz was like, is he coming? Let him in.
I think the UFC is going to have to change something, because I think this is going to, they're just relying on past press conferences, past performances. I think at some point it's just going to be this, you know, empty arena type of setting where it's hard to sell big pay-per-views and just highlights, you know? That's why Francis Ngannou isn't, you know, Jorge Masvidal. It's just because obviously his highlight reel is amazing, but
It's going to take, like, I think someone like when The Rock tweets about Jorge Masvidal, people are going to see that. So like when Shaq puts out those clips of Francis Ngannou picking him up, people are going to like grasp onto that. It's going to take a big star to really help push the UFC to outside of the MMA scene.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And then they're going to have some competition again very soon. NBA is coming back.
Yep.
Major League Baseball is about to kick off. The NHL playoffs are about to kick off. So then the NFL is kicking off. And
I think personally it's going to help, because we're going to get a lot of games on ESPN, and you're going to have UFC commercials right between like the NBA Finals. Like, I know everyone hates talking about professional wrestling, but the NBA Finals is a ratings juggernaut, like viewership juggernaut. They're going to have AEW wrestling commercials during an NBA Finals. They had better not lose any of those rating wars on whatever night they're on.
Thoughts on Zhang Weili versus Rose Namajunas? If you had to bet money, who would you bet it on?
Oof. I was just thinking.
We got to do this smart. Yeah. If we're doing a straight pick'em, I've always been a big believer that to be the man or the woman, you got to beat the man or woman. So until Zhang Weili is defeated, I'm picking her against anybody. That's just me. Unless she fights Valentina, and then we have a different discussion.
And look, Rose is hittable. All right, Rose is hittable. And I mean, she did a great job avoiding Andrade for the first two rounds of that last fight. But we saw how much damage could be done. I believe Rose had a broken nose from it. I think Zhang's a little bit quicker than Andrade. I think she hits just as hard. And we're talking about a five-round fight, most likely, you know. Yeah, I can't see anyone. Yeah.
Is this fight in a tiny octagon?
I think if it's in a tiny octagon, Weili has the advantage. In a bigger octagon, I think Rose has the advantage.
I agree.
I think it's Zhang has advantage in the bigger one and an even bigger advantage in the smaller one.
I think Rose has the style to potentially frustrate Zhang Weili. And anytime we could see Rose Namajunas fight, especially when she's in a great place, it's just beautiful. It really is.
I was thinking about this fight the other day, and it's like, this is my most anticipated fight that hasn't been booked yet. That's going to be booked. Like, most anticipated championship fight. I mean,
more than Habib Gaethje?
Yeah. Yeah.
My God.
I want to see that. I want to see that fight. But now, even like Habib, I'm kind of, I don't know, I'm kind of worried about Habib, honestly. You know, just where he is and how, you know, that's another thing. But
Of course.
But I think Weili and Rose are just, it's like, why not? Why is it this over? These may be the two best strawweights we've ever seen, you know? So
yeah, I agree. But I think, like we've said, literally every single A side, that Gaethje has the most tools to beat, to do the thing no one has ever done. And Habib could be the greatest lightweight ever, and Gaethje is the most violent man ever. And that, to me, is the most anticipated fight. Like I said, just Zhang Weili and Rose is just happens to be the second. It just happens to be the second most anticipated for me, because Habib is not looked beatable ever. And Zhang Weili and Yuan just had an epic war. But an epic war means it was a back-and-forth fight. Habib's never had that. And I think Gaethje's the man to give it to him.
And we got to keep in mind, too, we don't know when Rose is coming back.
Yeah.
We have no idea. So if Zhang Weili and her team calls Dana White in the next month and says she's ready to go, what do you do? You book the rematch with Joanna, run that one back, and wait till Rose is ready to go? Or do you just hold out on one of your rising stars globally until Rose is ready? That's, you know, I don't know. That's the process. That's the kind of place we're in right now. Do you get Dwight Whaley out there just to fight again? Because I think everyone would be excited to see her fight Joanna one more time. It's one of the greatest women's fights of all time, if not the greatest women's fight of all time.
Oh, whoops.
Habib is done.
No, he's not done.
I'd rather watch Whaley and Rose than Gaethje Khabib.
There you go. There you go. Everyone's spoken now.
Well, this person has mixed and matched first and last names all across the board. So
if Zhang has to fight again before Rose is ready, I guess you go winner of Gadelha Xiaonan. I guess it's not like the best.
Got Esparza and Marina Rodriguez coming up too.
Okay, exactly. Yeah, it's really.
I think Amanda Ribas is going to get the winner of that.
Yeah, really. Namajunas is such the obvious choice that any other name we mentioned is clearly just kind of like a sort of a stay busy. Not to say that it's like an easy fight, but definitely a stay busy for Zhang, who's been so dominant.
Sure.
So many awesome strawweights. Everything's gonna get repetitive.
Most anticipated fight is me versus Niall McGrath. There you go.
Is that gonna be a real fight? Is that really a fight, or what is that, Jose? It's not gonna be a fight.
It's not. Yeah, you're right, because the fight's evenly matched.
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw him into a wishing fountain, and then he's gonna get a wishing fountain. He's like, "Why did you just desecrate this wishing fountain?" I'm gonna be like, "Look at this man," and then be like, "Oh yeah, he probably hasn't taken a shower in like a year, so you probably did him a favor." I'm like, "Yeah, you're right. So you're welcome, Planet Earth."
Gosh, most anticipated fights for me: Ryan Hall versus Ricardo Lamas. Number one, obviously. Number two, Frankie Edgar, Pedro Munhoz. Everything else is distant third. Michelle Pereira. Oh my God. Oh, whoa. Number three, Michelle Pereira, Zalim Imadaya. I'm so sorry, Zalim. I apologize for not knowing your last.
I was right. Did you reboot right now?
I was right. No, Pereira and Imadaya. I was right. I got the name right. I'm sorry. I apologize for thinking, for muddling it up in the first place. So there you go. There's your top three fights to look forward to, people. Okay. Here's your top three.
I'm not even going to say Ortega and Korean Zombie because I don't want to think about it.
Oh, it's definitely happening. It's definitely happening.
Shut up.
All right. I think we've done enough here. Where are we at? We're over an hour for sure. Yeah. But that's the beauty of ending these fight cards early. So more time to chat with the peeps, even though you say we're all soy boy drinkers or whatever.
You can't tell me that because I drink my coffee like an adult.
Me too. See what that says? I had it iced black.
Right there.
You guys are amazing. I know you guys, I'm talking about the, not the people I'm working with at the time, but the people watching. You guys, I think, I'm pretty sure many of you have been here from the beginning of this broadcast. So
I don't know why.
Bless you guys. I don't know why.
Probably screaming at the camera, button your shirt, AK, button your shirt. No,
they've been screaming for me to unbutton the shirt. And I've tried very hard to ignore those comments. But I don't know how these guys take it. 25 minutes in, I wanted to leave. So I don't know how you guys do it.
I wanted to leave too.
Yeah.
Do we have the rim shot?
We don't have the rim shot. Casey, we got to add the rim shot.
Okay, here goes.
Also appropriate.
They're waiting for Jose to talk about Niall McGrath, and we got that done. And
there we go. I'm glad I stuck around for that, and everyone else did too. But yeah, you guys are crazy. I love everyone who's watching on YouTube and watch these shows. You guys are the best. I'm getting emotional. It's like I just want to say.
Right. Soy boy drinkers, haha, false. Also, Niall McGrath looks like TJ Detweiler. Make a trend.
That's really good.
I'm glad someone.
Good night, everybody. Thank you for all the questions. Thank you all for watching, you crazy animals. Hope you guys enjoyed the fights, and we're back at it next Saturday. What a great card that's going to be. Bellator's back next week. A lot to be excited about. For AK, for Casey Lyon in the truck, for Jose Youngs, I am Mike Heck. Have a good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.